And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 to noon show here on Highland Radio. And we're all set for another 3 hours, keeping you informed, entertained and getting your views, hopefully, too. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. If you're listening outside the Republic, it's 00 353 86 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 074 91 25000, and your emails are to comments at highlandradio.com. Alright, and don't forget, if you want to watch the show, by the way, you can do so by going to our website and click the Watch Live button. Or we're on X, YouTube, and where else? Facebook, of course. Right, let's have a look at the papers. Jaconal Tribune, you heard it in the news there. Pat the Cope Gallagher for president. That sounds about right among Fianna Fáil supporters across the West Northwest European constituency, which is an electorate of 1.8 million voters. In the past week, party grassroots have increased their lobbying campaign to have Deputy Gallagher selected for a Fianna Fáil nomination ahead of a final decision in September. Early last year, many were surprised, especially amongst the Fianna Fáil suits in Dublin, when the Cope declared his intention to launch a bid to regain his seat in the constituency. Last September, it seemed a done deal to have two runners, one each in the north and the south of the county. Charlie McConnell Logan was expected to be joined by Councillor Micheál Nocton from the Donegal electoral area, particularly following his poll-topping performance in the local elections. And then it goes on to, in great detail, as you can imagine, outline how those things unfold. Did now, I suppose, regardless of who it is, and Pat the Cope Gallagher would be, a good candidate. Of course, would be interesting to have someone from this county in the race. Would the party nationally support someone from Donegal in that position, and others as well? I don't know. We shall see. But anyway, it's the speculation is fun, isn't it? A leading Donegal cancer care campaigner has expressed frustration over the last-minute rescheduling of a meeting between advocates and hospital representatives, which had been set for Monday. The meeting was called off on Friday last, with attendees informed that one of the consultants had other commitments and appointments. But Betty Holmes, chairperson of Donegal Action for Cancer Care, now questions the timing of that decision in light of stark figures on cancer treatment times at the hospital that have since emerged. At that time, I took it in good faith. But I'm now wondering, was the meeting cancelled because all of this was coming out, she said. I would never disagree with Betty Holmes. The only thing I would say is we did know this information. I believe it was Councillor Declan Meehan had been finding out the wait times for the beginning of cancer treatment. So we already knew that we were well behind in terms of what the national picture was. So that information wasn't brand spanking new. But anyway, who's to say? You never know with these things. It's a shame that the meeting was postponed. I wouldn't be as convinced about the timing, as I say, because I think much of that info was already out there. The Derry News this morning. One in four people in the Derry City and Strabane District Council area were prescribed antidepressants in the last year, according to shocking new statistics. The figure, the highest of 11 councils in the north, was revealed in a new report. The figure, the highest of all councils, I'll read past that. 25% of the population in Derry and Strabane were prescribed antidepressants in the year 24-25, compared to 24.3% last year, marking a 14.7% increase between 2019-20 and 24-25. 37,693 people in the Derry and Strabane Council area were prescribed antidepressants in the year. And now, I'm not questioning these figures at all, but it is one in four people on antidepressants in that area, or at least had them prescribed. Is there any possibility of doubling up of prescriptions or people being counted twice or something? It just seems really quite remarkable. One in four people on antidepressants in that council area. But anyway, as I say, I'm not disputing the figures. It seems incredibly high. You might remember on Monday, just at the end of our preview of the DL debate, Brendan Devaney was talking to us. He was involved in a group that were hosting young Palestinian children who were coming to Ireland, and it was very early days, not early days as such, but in terms of what could be revealed publicly, that there were some activities planned for them in Donegal and what have you. And this was an opportunity for these young people from the West Bank, I suppose, to get out of the West Bank and to experience a nice break here. But unfortunately, the rug has been pulled from under that project for now. A group of young GEA players from Palestine have been refused visas to visit Ireland this month. GEA Palestine, which had planned to host 33 children and young people in Ireland, said it was deeply disappointed with the refusal decision and would immediately appeal. Our Irish visa applications for the GEA Palestinian summer tour has been refused by the Irish Immigration Services, the organisation said in a statement yesterday. A GEA Palestine spokeswoman said the visa section of the Department of Justice said in a refusal letter that insufficient documentation had been submitted with the application to the Irish embassy in Tel Aviv, Israel, in early May. She questioned why it took until less than a week before they needed the visas to confirm them, to inform them of this. She said any outstanding documentation requested was provided and that any further documentation could have been provided. We're heartbroken at this. So it's not out of the question completely at this point. They are going to appeal it. But as we heard, even locally here in Donegal, plans were afoot to I suppose, to host and entertain these young children, but they've been refused their visas and it does seem very last minute. I do understand that maybe there is some child welfare concerns that every T must be crossed and every I dotted. I hope they're going through all of that. I think that was one of the reasons that were given. I mean, not that there's any question over the welfare of these children, but if the rules are there, the rules are there. If they need further documentation, if it's given to them, hopefully then the visas are awarded and those children can come over and get a break from, even though they're in the West Bank, it's still to a great extent an occupied territory. On to the Irish Independent, and there could be an all-out ban on sunbeds. They remain incredibly popular. But Ireland may ban commercial sunbeds following a report highlighting the cancer risks and how they are being used by, wait for this, children as young as 10. That's one of those things I read and I can't believe it, but maybe it must be true. They've done the studies, haven't they? But kids as young as 10 on sunbeds. A working group has been set up to look at the issue, Junior Health Minister Jennifer Murnane O'Connor said. A report from the Institute of Public Health has recommended the ban to reduce the risk of skin cancer in Ireland, which has one of the highest rates in the world. This report reinforces what we already know. There is no safe level of sunbed use. That was Miss Murnane O'Connor. The report shows 5.2% of children aged 10 to 17 reported having used a sunbed, and 4.4% of children in the same age group reported using one in the last 12 months. Sunbed use is similar among boys and girls and among teen and teenaged children. So are they using them in the house? I mean, I can't imagine they're using them on any commercial premises. The report pointed out that skin cancer is the most common form of the disease in Ireland, with more than 11,000 cases of melanoma and non-melanoma skin cancer diagnosed annually. Using a sunbed carries risks. The highest risk is associated with use in childhood and adolescence, as well as frequent use. So 5% of kids 10 to 17 have been on a sunbed. Almost 5% have been on a sunbed in the last year. Lazarus, there you go. 086 60 25,000, any view on that? Experts have called for the Criminal Assets Bureau to be used against people who steal money from their elderly relatives. This is the lead in the Irish Daily Mail. A TD told the Oireachtas Health Committee that he went to the Gardaí after he learned that a man with dementia had over €100,000 taken from his bank account in 12 months. And this would fall under the regular conversations that we have about elder abuse. It's not necessarily it's not necessarily physical abuse or even emotional abuse. Financial abuse is a big issue. However, the Gardaí told him, wait till you hear this, the Gardaí told him they couldn't act against the man's relative because dementia sufferers cannot give evidence in court. Mervyn Taylor, a board member with the Safeguarding Ireland charity, told the committee that such crimes should be tackled by the Criminal Assets Bureau. So here's a gentleman, an elderly gentleman, with dementia. He's got a relative who's cleaned 100 grand out of his bank, and he knows it. And he can't give evidence because he has dementia, so it can't be really pursued. There's no witnesses as such. Or anyway, CAB is one mechanism they say that can be looked at because the person is in receipt of the money. They have to explain how they got it, Mr. Taylor said. I think that's important. I think that's what we need to do and be seen to be doing so that people aren't exploited like this. I would say that happens a lot. I would say it happens an awful, awful lot, and we don't hear about it. If you have any views on that or any experience of that, let us know, 0866 20 5000. The Farmers Journal is out today, and the farm sector is reeling from a shock move to radically change tack on Ireland's approach to applying for a new nitrates derogation by adding further conditions to the process. 6 months out from the current derogation expiring, Minister for Agriculture Martin Hayden has said that Brussels demanded that Ireland must prove that the derogation does not negatively impact protected habitats. And every time we talk about the nitrates directive, I go back to the last there was a debate in leading up to the general election, and there was a high-ranking member of government. I can't remember his name. And it was in the conversation, and just quite flippantly, he says, well, the derogation is gone now, effectively, or it will be gone. And sometimes you feel like that was the insight. You know, is that really the reality, that the derogation is gone? And we're just going to spend a while talking about it until the reality sets in. I don't understand, and maybe it's cultural, and please forgive me in case I'm offending people's culture. I don't intend to do so, and I know ignorance is not a defence, but I really don't understand the lighting of pallets as part of I mean, I presume it is cultural, right? Is it? That must be the case, and maybe I should do more research, but I don't really get the point of it. But anyway, that's fine. It's probably significant, and I respect that. But this crack of putting stuff on the pallets as well, you might have seen in Tyrone, a boat is up on top of one of the stop the boats. I'm not sure how many people coming off boats into Britain are going into Northern Ireland. But anyway, stop the boats. They've put a punt on top of this fire, and they've put in mannequins that represents people in this boat. A lot of this, I'm not sure who funds this, but... And this is probably money that could be going to support the Orange Order's parades in... I'm not saying this is the Orange Order doing this, but it could go and support the parade in Rosnala, that boat and all those mannequins, not cheap. But anyway, so even if you are against immigrants coming in on boats, and they also say veterans before refugees, but even if that is the case, I mean, how could you stand around and light up the pallets and then also sort of cheer on as a boat with... you know, the representation of human beings in it is burnt. I mean, is that what you cheer at it? I don't understand that. And I seem to do this every year where I wish I had a better understanding of it. And I say some of it obviously must be cultural, but anyway, refugees of migrants in a boat have been placed on a loyalist bonfire, prompting condemnation and calls for it to be removed. The boat containing more than a dozen life-sized mannequins wearing life jackets has been erected on top of the bonfire in Moygashel, in the outskirts or on the outskirts of Dungannon. Below it are several placards, one stating stop the boats and another veterans before refugees. Sinn Féin Assembly member for Fermanagh and South Tyrone, Colm Gildenu, branded the display vile and deplorable. And you're going to get that, right? So, you know, it's a loyalist bonfire. Someone from Sinn Féin is going to condemn it. Others will condemn it too. But I'd be very interested in to know generally in the wider loyalist stroke Protestant community what the view is. You know, if people are against that, should those calls come from within rather than every single year something is done by one side, let me put it like that, and then the other side condemns it, and we kind of move no further forward. Last two papers here. We'll start with the Star. GEA anti-sexual violence messages will be heard at All Ireland semi-finals this weekend in a bid to tackle issues like domestic abuse. So if you're going to the game, if you've got a ticket, this is what you're going to be hearing. The hard-hitting campaign stresses how important such as intimate image abuse or revenge pornography are outlawed as coercive control and sexual exploitation. It seeks to promote positive male role models who will help to highlight opposition to all gender-based violence. So that'll be, you'll be exposed to that down at that game this weekend. And finally, a former employee at Dublin's Trinity College has appeared in court over an alleged €570,000 fraud at the top university. Helen Richardson, 46, faces 102 charges of theft and money laundering in 2020 and 21. She was Trinity's undergraduate student support officer at the time of the alleged offending. $570,000. Well, okay. Let us go to our break, and then we'll go to our first guest. Stay right where you are. So as you would know, we've covered extensively on this programme calls for a surgical hub to be provided at Letterkenny University Hospital. Just a quick recap, we've heard from consultants say, they say that this is incredibly important to the future survival and retention of services at Letterkenny University Hospital. They've been actively campaigning for it. Then it emerged that there was one business plan for a surgical hub that was in Sligo. And then it subsequently emerged from independent Marion Harkin that this formed part of the Larry Independence negotiations with government. She said that it was already in the HSC's plan, and she just wanted to make sure that that commitment was followed through on. Then we had Michael Healy-Ray on, and he said very clearly that she's been battling hard for this, and this was a red line issue, and this, she managed to get it into that deal, and we'll make no bones about that. I have those clips. I might play them a little later on if we need any further context, because it's on the record, right? I'm not pulling this information out of my backside. Now, this issue was raised again in the Dáil yesterday by Donegal Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin, who was seeking some clarity from the Taoiseach in relation to this. And the Chief Whip, Sinn Féin's Chief Whip, Pádraig McLoughlin, is with me on the show now. And good morning, and thanks so much for your time, Pádraig. I do appreciate it. Right, so you sought some clarity from the Taoiseach. What did you say, what did he say, and what did you take from it?
Well, Pierce Doherty was taking the Finance Committee yesterday, and he'd asked me to come in. There was an opportunity here with the Taoiseach, you know, tied down in the committee, to put this question to him and get clarity on it. So I did that, and Taoiseach responded and said that there is no deal, and said that the process is ongoing. My view on it is this, is that the surgical hub, as you know, the original plan was just for six, and they were going to be in the Model 4 hospitals, so they were going to have two in Dublin, the usual mentality, two in Dublin, one in Waterford, Cork, Limerick and Galway, and everybody above that infamous Galway to Dublin line, we're all second-class citizens when it comes to health services, was going to get nothing. That was the usual. There was a pushback then in the region, and we've been at this for quite a while, and the principle of a surgical hub for the Northwest, that was secured. But there was a mentality, I think, within senior HSC management in the region, maybe Marion Harkin spotted this, that sure, where else would it go with Sligo? You know, Donegal, there really is a mentality that we are just a backwater. We're just a sort of a Iceland, you know, either a long distance away, and sure, why would they need the same service as everybody else? That's the mentality, I don't care what they say. And I think this is the way it was drifting until there was an uprising in Donegal, and particularly led by the consultants. This has been vital. The people who work at the coalface in our hospital, and also the GPs who deal with our patients all across Donegal, they know better than anybody what's going on in our hospital. And it's unprecedented, 171 that stood up. And I think that's just changed the whole game. And I think whatever plans Micheál Martin, Marion Harkin and others might have had are in real trouble now. And we just need to keep the pressure on.
When the Taoiseach said that, you know, no deal had been done in relation to this, that had to be the answer, didn't it? Because apparently there were no goodies for independence. So that could be the only answer. I'm not saying for a second that the Taoiseach was misleading the Dáil, but do you take him at his word in relation to this, that this is still an open process? I thought it quite interesting when he talked of there can be no political interference in the process, yet everything up until now, it would seem, has been political interference in the process to ensure it was delivered and to ensure it was delivered for Sligo.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Greg. I think you're on the money here. And that was part of the reason, you know, Pierce Doherty had spotted the opportunity, have him locked down in the Finance Committee, and to get in there and to put the question directly to him. And I think he probably had no choice other than to say there is no deal in relation to this. Marion Harkin did let the cat out of the bag, in my opinion. I think there was a mentality right into late last year and probably into early this year that, sure, where else would you put a surgical hub? We'll add another one on, sure, we'll put it in Sligo. You know, this has been an attitude for a long time. I mean, we have, and we haven't been imagining this, we have been neglected in every objective analysis of our hospital, the size of the hospital, the many patients go to the hospital, the population that we deal with can see that we are second class citizens. So listen, I actually am very positive at the moment. I've never seen such a successful effort by all our surgeons and doctors united. Even the government TDs are on board in Donegal, and that hasn't happened before. We've got them all on board. And I just think now we need to stay united, focused. And you're spot on. I think the only answer you could give yesterday was there is no deal. Because if they go ahead with Sligo now, we'll know it isn't down to objective facts. It isn't down to what's right. It's about a dodgy deal. And I don't think they can go ahead with that now.
And of course, they're saying that that isn't the case. But ironically, the campaign for a surgical hub for Letterkenny was potentially strengthened by the intervention of Ministers Harkin and Healy-Rae, because it pulled the curtain back to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to quite a few people in the days, that day that Marion Harkin said it, and in the days that followed. And our view was that she let the cat out of the bag, sorry to repeat that phrase again, that they had... maybe, I don't know what reason Marion Harkin felt the need to do it, maybe vanity, I don't know, but they obviously felt that they had a deal. They felt, sure, of course it was going to be Sligo. They'd never seen coming the fight back in Donegal, and I think they're under real pressure now. And the problem for Micheál Martin was, if he had said yesterday to me, yes, I have a deal done in Sligo, so that's politically disastrous. So I think our campaign has put them under serious pressure. We just need to keep it going in Donegal. I do believe, and if we win this battle, we crack the whole edifice of what's been going on. We break through the mentality of neglect, which is that Donegal is out of the limb, out of the distance. So we just need to keep it going now.
Just in the last minute, sometimes we hear things, you know, when an issue's being discussed often and people hear surgical hub, surgical hub, surgical hub, and sometimes you're listening but you're not hearing. It's very clear, not just for, this is not just about, you know, Donegal being treated one way or other. It's imperative for the future of that hospital as it is and its future development that there is a surgical hub. An ambulatory centre, which the HSE continues to push and push and push. It's many, many years down the line. It's been promised before. It's very critical, isn't it, that a surgical hub for anyone who has been, will be, or is in that hospital, that it is provided for the future very vital services there.
Indeed, and I now just ask listeners in Donegal, look at what happened at Enniskillen, which is a fabulous hospital, south and west it's called, and they lost their emergency department and now they've lost their surgical services. I mean, that's disastrous. And what I'm told by our experts in Letterkenny, our consultants and our surgeons, is if we don't turn around our surgical services soon, we're going the same direction as Enniskillen. That's unthinkable, absolutely unthinkable. So that's how serious this is. And I feel at last, what happens with campaigns is you chip away for years, chip away. Greg, you've been raising this issue for years, but then you get momentum and then you get everybody on the same page. So in Donegal now, I think we have them under serious pressure. I think we have them in real difficulties. I think that's why Marion Harkin felt the need to say, I have a deal and so on. But we just need to keep at it. We have to win this battle. And then when we win this battle for the hub, we keep going to make sure all of our services, all we're asking for in Donegal, Greg, and you know, you've said this so many times, we're just asking for the same services as everybody else. No special treatment, just the same as every other person in this country. Is that too much to ask? I really don't think so.
Thank you very much for your time. Have a good day. That is Sinn Féin Party Whip Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. And as I say, you know, obviously this whole story, we've been tracking it very closely, as you can imagine, on this programme, because it's so important to us. I just want to sort of maybe take an opportunity just to remind...
Just to clarify one thing
To remind us as to how we got here. In terms of the potential, is there a deal there? Isn't there a deal there?
I know there's a slight... I just want to clarify one thing
Marion Harkin, with you, if that's okay. when you say that you got a commitment in the programme for government for a surgical hub for the North West, was the commitment you received specific to Sligo, or was it for the North West generally?
At that point, if you go to the HSE business plan, it was described as a surgical hub for Sligo. It was already there in the HSE business plan, and that is what I pushed for, because I believe it will serve most of the Northwest.
Minister Harkin, I want your sort of a reflection from you, but I just want to clarify something, and I'm sorry to keep, maybe I've already clarified this, but the location of a surgical hub in Sligo, as recommended by the HSE and as predates, you know, your agreement with them, I recognise all that, that is actually forms part of an agreement for your government support. I phrased it maybe a bit antagonistically earlier, and I didn't intend to do so, really. I couldn't phrase it as I wanted to. But it does. It is a fundamental plank of your support for government. Is that fair to say?
It was already there in the HSE capital plan.
Understood, yeah.
And I wanted to make sure it remained there.
I wanted to make sure it stayed there in response to the fact that this is a fundamental plank of your support for government. And then, just in case there was any ambiguity there, we had Minister Michael Healy-Rae on the programme, and he made things incredibly clear. This is 2 minutes, but let's listen to it just to put it back on the record.
Yes, I am. And what I can tell you about Minister Harkin's work and her involvement in this issue, she has been what I would call ferocious in her work ethic in highlighting this issue and trying to do what is right. And she has been an awful strong advocate about this issue. And I know, because I hear it going on, I'm not directly involved in that myself, but she is, and she's doing what I would call ferocious work and is using her position in supporting government at trying to highlight this and trying to get it prioritised. Mm. And I commend her for her work on that, because she is very strong on it and she is working diligently in trying to help her constituents with regard to this and many, many other issues.
Could some people, if they want to, and I know people don't like the word, frame it as a goodie? In other words, that this was, one of those potential red lines for the region to secure that support for the government. I don't like that word, but it's the word that's being
Do you know, you can call it what you like, but what I call it is people doing their work. And Minister Harkin, when she would have been approaching her issues as that she wanted highlighted and what I would call red line issues, everybody has those. And people talk about parochial issues and that, oh, it should be about the bigger picture. But at the end of the day, all politics is local. And if you don't take care of people in your locality, and if you're not an advocate for them, they're the people who go out and support you at the end of the day. And people have a choice when they go out to vote. They see who's working, they see who's delivering. And in the case of Marion Harkin, she is what I would call good value for money, because I actually sit alongside her every day and her work ethic is second to none. And she, of course, would have been fighting and advocating for the priorities that were important to her, as we all would have been as individuals. And there is nothing wrong with that. And you can call them special concerns, you can call them what you like, but at the end of the day, all we're all trying to do is what's the best for people.
So that's Michael Healy-Rae saying quite clearly that all of the independents had their issues in their meetings with government to secure the support. And it was you can call it a red line, you can call it a goodie, you can call it whatever you like. So just to be absolutely certain, I just wanted to make sure that we stuck that back on the record so people understand, if you've missed any of this conversation, the full context of the exchange between Deputy Padraig McLoughlin and Micheál Martin in the Dáil yesterday. Now, I'm joined on the programme by Anne-Marie E. Ickey, who's principal of Skull Angel Hivady, and it is a school in the west of our county that is on the search for new students. Anne-Marie, good morning to you. Imagine why.
Imagine why, Greg.
Right. Now, you're at a critical point here, are you? Talk to me actually firstly about where your school's at and a little bit about the school.
Okay, so our school is in Cadieux in Buttonport, and we are an Irish medium school. We got recognition as a Scoil Gaeltacht there last February, having converted back to Irish from being English from the 1970s. We were initially Irish medium when the school opened in 1903, but we had to change back to English in the 1970s due to different needs and things in the school and lack of resources and things like that. So we're delighted that we are the only Irish medium school in the area.
But to maintain certainly staffing levels, I'm not sure, maybe you can talk to the future of the school as it stands as a whole. You need additional students. You have 7 students at the moment and you need more to retain both teachers.
Yeah, so we've 7 students at the minute, but we've 2 incoming, so we have 9 for September 2025, but we need another 2 students to retain the second teacher. We will have the second teacher this year, but your numbers are based on your enrolments by the end of September in the coming school year, so we are offering now this bursary to try and up our enrolments and keep our second teacher.
Why is the small number of students? Is it about the amount of younger people in the population locally? Is it that parents are opting for other schools in the vicinity and, you know, you'll have to fight your corner? Pardon my ignorance on that, Anne-Marie. Just curious as to what...
I think it's kind of a mixture of both, really. There isn't many young families in the area, unfortunately. Mm. You know, it is sparsely populated. Also, we have the challenge there are other schools in the area as well. And as I said, we're the only Irish medium school in the area, and we're new to being an Irish medium school again. So we're just kind of trying to make people aware of all the wonderful advantages that go hand in hand with Irish medium schools and with bilingual children.
I mean, we'll talk about the bursary in a moment, but also, too, one has to consider that the almost individual attendance, attention potential students might get from the school, from the teachers, given the amount of pupils versus teachers.
Well, that's it. It's, you know, you can't say it's 1-to-1, but I mean, a class size of, 5 or 6 children is, you know, the child's going to get a lot more from their education as opposed to a class size of 30. So that's a huge advantage in itself.
And in terms of children transferring to the school, obviously, you know, you may be talking about new enrolments at junior infants, etc. But I mean, is there an opportunity for, if parents are listening to this and think, right, this could really work for me and my family, to transfer to that school if it suits them?
Yeah, of course, 100%. We had a girl who came to us last year to complete her final year in primary school. She came from an English medium school, and she did amazingly. She did excellent. It's because she was motivated herself to learn through Irish, and her parents wanted it for her because they recognised all the great advantages that went with it as well.
So what's this €2,000 bursary then, and how does it work?
The bursary is being offered as a travel bursary. We are aiming to try and entice children from outside our catchment area and realise that maybe some financial burdens may come with that as well. So we are offering this bursary to try and alleviate that financial burden for parents, and so that if they want to choose Irish medium children or Irish medium education, sorry, for their children, that would help them do that. It would be an easier decision for them.
And that's in the first term, or is it ongoing?
It would be €1,000 payment in the first year and another €1,000 in the second. We obviously have to protect ourselves in case somebody would sign up and run off with the money. So it would be paid over 2 school years.
Yeah, for junior and senior infants.
Yes, but we're also offering a partial bursary to children if they wish to enrol in other classes as well. Obviously, if we got junior infant pupils, we would have to prioritise those for the bursary. But we're also willing to offer a partial until those spaces are filled.
And do you have to fund this yourself, Anne-Marie, or?
Yeah, we do, yes. It's not funded by the state. We fundraise in our school quite often, so we are using our fundraising towards this bursary. And actually, yesterday we were actually notified of a unanimous donation that's going to be made to fund a fourth child if we get one. So somebody's willing to fund that €2,000, which is amazing.
And how do you think the school survives long-term, Anne-Marie? I mean, I can understand that is this just to get the numbers up, for to get the kids in, to keep the teachers, or is there a sense that if more people come, maybe it might be, see, you know, more people might go, right, okay, something good's happening there, let's send my kids. So, like, what is the long-term plan? Because this would get you over the line and retain the teachers, but what about the future of the school?
Yeah, it's... As I said, we're in an area that's not a Gaeltacht area, even though we are a Gaeltacht school. So it's just trying to make people aware of how good Irish medium education is for their children. You know, if you think about the Official Languages Act, it was amended in 2021, and it states that by 2030 that 20% of public sector workers have to have Irish. So newly recruited public sector workers have to have Irish. So that's 20%. So our kids would have a huge opportunity for employment in the area, or even if they left the area and if they wanted to come back, that they're in that 20% and would be you know, offered a job quicker than other children. So that's a huge opportunity as well.
Yeah, and I tell you what, something else which not every school has, but it's fantastic for working parents or parent, is a morning club, which kicks off at 8:20, and after schools as well, which runs until 6 p.m. I mean, there are parents in different parts of the county that will bite their right hand off for that, to have that service.
It is an amazing service for the working families, you know, that they can.
Any houses for sale in Burton Port?
yeah, that's a huge advantage for the working parents, you know, that they have that peace of mind that they can drop off from as early in the morning as 8:20 and pick up at 6 if need be.
Yeah, stay there. Councillor Micheál Colum-Nasberg is chair of the Irish Language Committee on Donegal County Council. And Micheál Colum, it's fantastic what the school is doing, what Anne-Marie's doing to sort of, you know, try and secure the future of the school with the current staffing levels. But it's potentially to a terrible indictment that the schools have to work so hard and do so much off their own bat to continue the great work that they're doing.
Yeah, look, first thing I'd like to just kind of commend Anne-Marie, I guess, Patrick and everybody involved in this. They've been working at this for a very long time, and it's a sad state that we're in, where the school community is, I suppose, in a forced into a position that would have to offer this money, and fair play to them for their initiative, where I believe that the state needs to be doing far more. But look, as Anne-Marie outlined there very, very clearly, is that education through the medium of Gaelic does offer a massive opportunity for the children in adult life, when within their working life, most definitely. And we all know that any child that is reared or educated through two languages, that it also helps them as well in later life in terms of development. And it just saddens me to see rural schools, and I would know this school very, very well because it's only over the road from me, and I've been interacting with them for many, many years now. And it just saddens me to see that this is where we're at. And
what could be done, Micheál, what could be done to support a school like this better? Would it be the council? Would it be the Department of Education, the state? Like, you know, what do you think isn't being done that could be done for this school? Because obviously you can only sort of pull students from your catchment too. And I think, you know, that this is why the travel bursary is there, because the school recognises they have to go outside the area. So there's a great school, great teachers, but the population of a certain or the correct age simply isn't there to maintain the numbers. That's why a travel bursary is required. So is there anything the council or the state or the Department of Education could be or should be doing?
Well, look, I think the state can always do more, and I think looking back historically in terms of the state's attitude towards the Irish language and Gaelic, and I think now, lately, there has been a massive big revival in relation to the language right around the whole 32 counties, but unfortunately in the Gaeltacht, we're in a massive decline, and it's quite a complex conversation, and I think it's one that has to be openly had. But I do think that there is a population around the school and at a Heju, and I think what it is that the confidence maybe, and I'm not being disrespectful to anybody here, is the confidence maybe of some parents who mightn't feel that confidence themselves and their own ability in language, and they want to see their children progress and they want to be able to help them with their homework and any school work. But I do believe that there is a certain population there that can help fill this as well. And I think that what the support that the school community is given, as you outlined clearly there in terms of the club breakfast and then the after school club, and then the support from the Irish language officer within the area through the Drisna Gaeltachta. But we know ourselves within Corlachonda Gunagal locally in the Glenties MD, we will be inviting the delegation in, and we've been discussing this. I had raised that now, not the last meeting, but I think the one before that, that they would be coming in to do a presentation and seeing how we as public representatives can support. But rural schools are in decline. We see what's unfortunately happening in Dury, that come September that we're back to that they're in single digits, and that has a massive impact. And I think that long term, that it's unfortunate that the government didn't see the value of an Gaeltacht and the Irish language, mm-hmm. and hadn't that been so hostile to it over many, many generations. Yeah. And this is where we're at now. But I'd like to, look, Anne-Marie and Paddock and all them know me, and I've been to their meetings, and will continue to support the school community. But there is a broader discussion that has to be had. And I would clearly state or say to this to the wider community not to be frightened of your child being educated through the medium of Gaelic, and that hopefully that there can be supports put in there for parents or carers that live locally, that if they feel they need it.
All right, thanks very much indeed, Councillor Micheál Colum. Interesting point about maybe parents being a bit cautious. Sometimes we have to trust the children too, don't we, Anne-Marie? You know, I mean, they're learning, potentially learning another language whilst they're at school. It is a, compared to what you might see in Dublin city centre or Letterkenny for that matter, it's an intimate teaching environment, which I think, if it were me, I think that sort of outweighs, you know, any potential concerns you might have about helping with homework and everything down the line.
Yeah, that's it. You know, from speaking to parents, you know, they seem to think that homework's gonna be an issue for them. That's totally not the case. I mean, all our families in the school are very comfortable with it. There's never any issues, I can say hand on heart, with homework. We have a couple of Ukrainian children that have come to us with no English or Irish, who have managed amazingly and are, you know, running about chatting away in Irish now with absolutely no problems. If the support's there, if it's taught properly in school, and it's going home with the children, they don't need much.
Yeah, and we are talking primary level as well. Aquila says, I wish they'd put on a bus from Dunlow to Caju for those wishing to have their children educated in Irish. Siobhan also says, lovely to see Anne-Marie, a wonderful teacher who taught my youngest lad. Okay, there you go.
Oh,
how do people find out more information on this bursary? Because, I mean, what it is effectively saying, you know, if you do... Again, though, you see, when you, the morning club, the breakfast club, and then the aftercare as well, that's a big attraction, of course. But, I mean, obviously, everyone has to be factored in financially. So if you need some assistance with the travel, how do people get more information?
Well, if there is... I'm not sure if we have a Facebook page that you can see. There's an advertisement.
We'll link
this.
It on our Facebook page. How's that?
Yeah,
that
if you can do that, yeah. So, or yeah. They can. My mobile number's there as well. They can give me a ring if they want some more information on it.
Okay, great stuff. Hopefully this conversation sparks something. We do appreciate your time, Anne-Marie. Take care of yourself. Thank you. Anne-Marie Icky there, who's a principal of Skull. on Angel Hiverdy. And if you want more information, check out our Facebook pages. We'll have that sorted for you very, very soon to link off. It's a good initiative. It's unfortunate, but it seems very attractive. And, I mean, you can do your education now right through third level in Irish, and I've spoken to many. It seems to be mostly women that I've engaged with rather than fellas that have done it. But, you know, it seems to be fantastic for their educational development. Porrig McLaughlin is such a pragmatic person, says a listener who talks a lot of sense. He's so passionate about his county and our health services here in Letterkenny. Keep up the good fight, Padraig, says a listener. Another, what reps did RTDs put in to persuade a hub for Letterkenny? Why are we always on the back foot? Well, I suppose Marion Harkin was in a position whereby the government needed support. She was part of a group of independents. That's probably how that worked. So much for our nation's great solidarity with Palestine, says a listener. We, meanwhile, members of the genocidal Israeli forces can swan in and out of Dublin without visas at all. The disparity between the two states could not be more hypocritical. Shame on our government, says a listener. Another, the fact we allow these sectarian hate marches and burnings to continue on this island is a joke. Imagine Muslims doing this. People would lose their minds. I think any group doing it is probably have the same reaction. But I take your point about if it were a different group of individuals. Okay, we have so much more coming up on the programme over the next couple of hours. We have to take a break now, though, for the news and obituary notices.